Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown on this day after the Ides of March. And we send our love to Brian, wherever he is, and to Sheila, his stalwart partner. We love you both for the progressive spirit, the sense of civic responsibility you've fostered in all of us, and for coming up with the idea of the Brown Briefly to begin with. Sheila contacted me just recently about the Village Green Memorial Gate project that's going on Vachon right now. The idea is to build an entrance gate kiosk kind of thing for the Village Green, but make it a memorial to those lost during this pandemic. And she reminded me that we should also recognize those lost in the 1918 pandemic, and in the pandemics that swept through the native people of Vachon and the Puget Sound region in the 17 and early 1800s. And I thought that was a really great sort of idea to make sure that we recognize. And for most people, they don't realize that at one point in this area, estimated by the Puyallup tribe, there were probably 10 to 20,000 people living on Vachon, Gig Harbor, Wallachat Bay, Tacoma area. So it's a very heavily populated area for Native people. And probably around 650, 700 or more on Vachon Island itself at contact. But through a series of pandemics that swept through the area, by the 1850s, when they were removed and placed on the Puyallup Reservation, they were down to 34. So these pandemics just decimated those native populations. And although we haven't seen those kind of death rates in this current pandemic, you know, the fact that we're edging up on 600,000 deaths in the United States alone is mind-boggling. It could have been so much different. So this is Tuesday, March 16th, in fact, the day after the Ides of March, in the year of Fauci and the failed attempt to get Republicans to vaccinate themselves. It's also the march of the great vaccination. 106% of islanders over age 65 are vaccinated. How can this be, Briefly?
I know the answer.
I'm sorry.
Overachievers.
That. Yeah. That shot, overachievers.
Yeah. Have we been visiting the cemetery?
No, they unfortunately had to count a few off-island folks who came in and had their shots here. That's why it went over.
I was thinking that.
Say it's all those Democrats voting twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's like a hidden enclave of seniors on that.
It probably is.
You know, it's
right. Yeah, left, the woods.
Left over from the 60s.
Hey.
Another issue that's a statistic is they're working off of the projections from King County and the Census Bureau, which, because they don't have an accurate count since 2010. So so there's some wiggle room in there, if you would. But it is interesting that Vachon is made up of overachieving seniors who get out and get their vaccinations. So that's a good thing. With us this morning in the Gene Bosch studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon is our master of the virtual mix, Zoom modulating sound engineer, and steady hand on the stick as we fly through this week is Truman O'Brien. So Truman, with a name like O'Brien, how is the Klan planning to celebrate St. Patrick's Day tomorrow?
Well, as you notice, we ran over a little today on our show this morning because we were doing our St. Patrick's Day show. We had to end with Parting Glass, which is, you know, the classic Ordang Syne of Ireland. So it actually comes from Scotland, but The Irish have adopted
it. We don't care. We'll take it.
Yeah, exactly. We adopted it, so it's all right. I think that's about it. You know, my older brother, RIP, used to have a big shindig boy every St. Patrick's Day. And I would never miss that. Have a little black and tan and, you know, a little Irish whiskey. And it was always fun. A lot of singing and carrying on. So
that's only the Irish community.
Exactly.
Oh, great. So on a more serious note, Truman, what's the current issue on Vashon that sort of has captured your attention?
Well, one of the kind of interesting things is the Park District, you know, is the legislature is trying to push through a deal that will pull the Park District out of the $5.90 cap from the junior taxing districts. So that is very interesting. It's passed, I believe it's passed one house and it's gone to the next. And so the Park District is putting the word out, hey, you know, write to your senators, let them know. But you really like to get this passed. Without it, because of the way this cap is administered, it could have a pretty devastating effect on our Park District. So anyway, they're encouraging folks to go out.
Yeah. Could you explain that cap a little bit for our listeners and for us?
Well, what it is that all of the junior taxing districts on the island, there's a $5.90 per thousand cap. So, and they're rank ordered in terms of importance. So like the fire and roads and some of these things all come ahead of the Park District. And now with the new health district, they're ahead of the Park District as well. So if they, you know, they go for a levy amount, you know, 50 cents or 80 cents or 10 cents, whatever it is. And those all total cannot go more than $5.90. So the Park District being at the bottom of the heap, if everyone else gets, if they were to get $5.80, the Park District would end up with 10 cents. That's not the case, but that's how it works. The higher they are up on the list, they get their money, and those downstream do not. So that's basically how that works.
And my understanding is the health district had pledged not to raise or raise to the point of affecting the Park District, but changed their mind. Is that correct?
It's kind of a long story, but when they were getting ready to vote on the district, it was the understanding that they would not take a levy amount that would be enough to affect the Park District. But once they got into it and looked at the actual finances of it, they realized, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to take more money than we anticipated. So that's why they approved 60 cents, which is going to affect the Park District fairly severely. So,
interesting. Any comments from the Breachleys?
No, that's an interesting bill that's gotten some good attention on Vashon, and I believe that Representative Fitzgibbon is the bill sponsor.
Right.
I was going to take a look at where it stands in the process, since we're now beyond the one of the major cutoff dates in the session. But my guess is that bill is necessary to implement the budget, which means that it persists throughout these caps. So my guess is it's still in the mix for this year.
Right. Great.
Good. So Truman, any funny events for you this week?
Well, I have one of those good news, bad news events. As you guys, I'll try and make this short, but as you guys know, my partners and I have bought an airplane. It's an older airplane, and we knew that there would be, you know, minor things that would go wrong that we would have to repair. And with the help of a very good friend who's a licensed mechanic, we've been doing most of the work ourselves. And we've discovered we have a small oil leak up front. On the in the front of the engine, and we figured out how to fix it, and we had to order a new seal for that. And I got online, I ordered the seal. It was $26. I said, okay, that's great. Oh, and then here's a little service letter that tells you how to put the seal in. And I read the service letter, and it says you really need this special tool to help you put the seal in. So we'll order the tool. $1,258 is what they're asking for the tool, a little piece of metal tool. I went, oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. So we go on YouTube, and well, there's another way to do it. It's harder, but you can do it. So I went, well, okay. But I still put the word out. Hey, does anybody have one of these tools? And one of the fellows from the airport said, you buy the generic version, it's $98. So we have the generic version is on its way for $98. So anyway, that's the good news, bad news thing.
They don't get you one way, they get you
another. That's true. That's true. It's kind of like buying cartridges for your printer, you know?
Yeah.
The printer's real cheap, but boy, they nail you with the cartridges. Exactly, so, right. Yeah.
They're not really in the printer business.
That's right. They're in the ink business.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So out of the land of magnolias and decked out in green with a spectacular green boar.
Wonderful.
Cheryl in her home on the island of Madronas is former Georgia Peach analytic academic, social worker, poet, backup singer, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, Lynn Kerrigan. Lynn.
Hi, good morning. Erin Gobra. Who can tell me what that means?
Good morning.
It doesn't have anything to do with underwear.
No.
Ireland forever.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, I'm celebrating early today. I intend to celebrate from now till midnight tomorrow. And to help you with that, I'm going to teach you an Irish phrase. This is, you'll maybe recognize it from James Joyce, because it means, yes, I said, yes, I will, yes. And it's, sha adurst, sha, sha. So, sha, sha,
sha,
sha adurst,
sha adurst.
Sort of an ST sound, sha adurst,
sha, sha adurst,
sha, sha,
sha adurst, sha, sha.
Yes, sounds
okay. Yes.
Okay, please, all together.
Yeah. Adores.
Perfect.
Well, thank you for that. You know,
it's also, can I just say, excuse me, it's also Women's History Month. And I was looking around at what events might be going around Vashon about that. And what I noticed just struck me funny. It was that the VCA is the Vashon Center for the Arts is hosting Arnaldo, the drag chanteuse on March 13th and March 27th. So if you haven't seen them, you can see it at 7:30 from a live stream from Vashon Center for the Arts. I personally love drag. I love the idea of men wanting to admire women so much they become them in all these fantastic ways. And I find it very fun. And there's also, same night, unfortunately, at the Pantages Theater in Tacoma, God is a Scottish Drag Queen, which I love the title of. It's some guy named Delamont, who has been doing a whole series of drag things, Mike and Chantel Delamont. So same thing. The tickets are $11.50 for the God is a Scottish drag queen, and only $10 donation at the Vashon Center for the Arts for Arnaldo Drag Chanteuse.
Yeah.
Sorry. Gail, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was admiring your green and thinking back to a visit a few years back to Ireland and how they had painted all of the red telephone booths that are classic English telephone booths, had painted them, the red ones, they were all turned green in Ireland. If you drove through Ireland, the telephone booths are all, you know, the same classic shape with the little glass and the lovely ornate metal, but bright green. And was
everything's
that
green in Ireland.
What did you,
and Boston.
Was that Gaelic that you were speaking? Is it Gaelic?
That was Irish.
Which
so
is Gaelic.
Irish
it's
goes
Gaelic.
By Irish now. Gaelic is Scots Gaelic. Actually, Gaelic is sort of the root language for Irish, but they're distinguishing it from Scots Gaelic, a little different pronunciation. Used to be called Irish Gaelic, and now they just call it Irish.
When I was traveling up there, at one point we stopped, and there was a gentleman who was probably would have definitely had his vaccine by now and been in the far aging group. And he came into the cafe where we were working, and he's he's speaking in the to the hostess, and we're sitting there not too far away listening in on this, and she's like, "I'm sorry, sir, I can't understand what you're saying." And he was speaking in Gaelic, and he says, "Ah, so you're going to make me wrap my tongue around that ugly English."
Yes.
You know, there's real feeling, deep feelings in those that part of the world around the English speaking or Gaelic speaking.
Well, English speaking, you know, were their conquerors, and, you know, the Germanic forms of English, you know, were part of that Saxon horde that the Irish fought a long time. And so we like to celebrate that independence.
So, Lynn, what current issues has captured your focus this week?
Oh, two things, I guess. And one, I kind of want to say how happy I am that Deb Holland, the Laguna Pueblo Native American woman, has now been confirmed by the Senate to be the cabinet secretary for the Department of the Interior. So I just find that amazingly ironic and way overdue and heartwarming that we finally have somebody of indigenous origin looking after sacred sites and water rights and drilling and the protection of our natural resources. And she sounds like a fierce woman, and I'm really hopeful that she'll be able to stop some of the rapacious development of America. I know it's what's propelled us to number one status, that we're willing to sacrifice our skies and our lands and our water and our air, you know, for fossil fuels, but surely there's a limit somewhere. And I'm glad to see that. And I think she'll be good. She sounds like she's got her head on her shoulders and her priorities in order. So I'm glad for that. And I've been, you know, as a woman, just feeling again the border issues with unaccompanied minors being ferried across the border now, you know, in little rubber rafts, and overwhelming a system that is not yet ready for them. You know, Biden is talking a lot about trying to build more facilities to house them. And yet if they come and we don't send them back to Mexico, they go into jail and detention centers, you know, that are not very habitable, much less good for children's development, teenagers' development. It's just something that I find heartbreaking. We've got such a issue in America, in my opinion, where we want their drugs, apparently, and so the cartels thrive, and so there's no other work, and so there's, you know, economies down there that are just destroyed by gangs and violence. And I'd like to see America, I know some of the stimulus package has some immigration reform in it and some money to invest in Central America. And I just think a lot about that. You know, I wonder what y'all think that we could possibly do. You know, surely we could do something, you know, send more of our businesses down there, you know, give them some jobs in some way in their homelands, you know, help, you know, battle the cartels. I don't know, but something's got to change. And I'm just curious what y'all think about that. Kevin.
Yeah, I think during the budget discussions, we're going to see more discussion about foreign aid and stabilizing some of the countries from which the refugees are arriving because of a couple things. Climate change, which has been largely induced by, you know, our past in terms of, you know, achieving industrial revolution and manufacturing dominance that has now moved to other countries like China. That's always a trade-off. And certainly if you look at the big debate that goes on between left and right in our political spectrum, that is certainly a bone of contention about whether we're America first or whether we're stewards of the globe. And I choose the latter myself, of course.
Well, and that's so reductive, you know, when I hear it's either or, because all of these issues are entwined and it's hard to unravel that Gordian knot. But I want to believe that there are ways that we can figure out to do that. If we had the heart to do it, that's to me what it seems like, as opposed to the battle between the way we think of people who are brown and black as not voting for Republicans, and so they must be demonized. That's just got to end.
Gail? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to add on to what Kevin was saying, that I think the issue of climate change is one of the driving forces, and will be even continue to be a larger driving forces in the years to come, you know, of migration from southern and mid latitudes. And so tying back to the appointment or confirmation of Deb Haaland, I think is very interesting, because I think taking care of our lands, waters, air, all the things that come with under the auspice of the Department of Interior ties back to that idea of wholeness. You know, the Earth is one whole planet. We cannot really anymore pretend that we are separate, or that it is an either or choice, us or them. It's all of us always.
It's also a cautionary tale in terms of how difficult it is to change the course of the ship of state. I mean, you know, 4 years of a policy of that did not work, and it did not work from the very beginning at the border, despite, you know, Biden and the Democrats' intent to change that. It doesn't change overnight. It takes time. It takes infrastructure. It takes all the things in place to make it work that aren't in place right now. And so it's going to be interesting to watch how that sort of plays out, and how in these sort of upcoming budget legislation debates, how that sort of focus on solving the problem at home in Central and South America is going to be reflected, because it's not just our problem, it's the problem of all the Americas. And it needs to be dealt with as an international issue, not as a national issue. And so it's going to be interesting to watch that. Truman, any reflections on that from you?
No, I've been watching with interest. One of the things about the pipeline that, you know, that's part of the issue. The pipeline really is carrying these tar sands down to the Gulf, which would be exported. So it's really not going to affect our economy in terms of the oil production, anyway. Makes it easier for the Southwest to produce more oil. I'm good for that, you know. Helps my family down there, so.
So highly visible on our Zoom screens this morning is the erudite editor of Indivisible Vashon's weekly online newsletter for your consideration, Kevin Jones. Kevin, what is Indivisible Vashon focusing on for the immediate future?
Oh, my goodness sakes. The most immediate thing that we have done over the last week is to resurrect our election work. So of all of the opportunities that we created for folks who wanted to help people get registered to vote, to encourage people to support the candidates that align with our values, we are overhauling that entire infrastructure, and we're just getting started to put that together. But the more immediate thing would be really kind of addressing where we're headed regarding access to the polls. And there's, you know, an amazingly large number of voter suppression legislation going on in many, many states, including Washington State. You know, there was a proposal by our Republican caucus here in the state that we should elect our governor by an electoral college process, as wonderful as that is for the nation. There's a number of efforts. One is in Georgia. There's a lot of work to contact major Georgian corporations and have them speak out on behalf of, you know, fair access to the polls, which they've done so in the past. And there's other organizations getting geared up to engage with, you know, how we should really treat this access to the polls, despite a chorus of, you know, voter fraud claims, which of course never materialized through multiple court cases after the 2020 election. So that's kind of the focus that we have right now.
So Kevin, my question to you is about how will HB1 and S1 affect this process, and how do you see that when it goes into the courts? How do you see the courts reacting to national voter rights legislation? For background, HB1 and S1 are the new Voting Rights Act. Kevin, you may have the actual title for those acts.
For the People Act, I believe.
For the People, right. That's right.
Yeah, the you know, so I think H1 is quite a large, has quite a number of components to it, and I'm admittedly not prepared to walk through them. Certainly, the courts are the go-to branch of government to address voting rights in this country. All of the laws that are currently, all the bills moving through state legislatures right now, that are viewed by some as suppressing the vote, certainly by me, will be challenged in court. And so, you know, it keeps a lot of lawyers busy and active, and in some case defending, in some case attempting to remove rights of people to the polls. So I think that's going to continue. Now, the other thing that I was thinking through this morning, and I don't have an answer to this, is eventually the only way that S1, which is the Senate companion, the only way it will move forward is with 60 votes in the Senate. And we've already seen with the COVID relief bill, the American Rescue Plan or American Rescue Act plan, I think, that we had bipartisan opposition to that, which just sort of is mind-boggling to many. But it doesn't bode well for bipartisan support for something like voter, you know, access to the polls legislation when Republican legislators across the country are actively working to promote the legislation that removes that access. So that's not going to happen, you know. So I think the question now becomes, at what point does that law have to be put in place to be in place in time to affect the elections in 2022? And so don't have an answer to that. That's sort of the next question that we're pursuing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the major barrier,
like that strategy.
The major barrier in the Senate is a filibuster, right?
Yes.
So removing the filibuster, which has been done in the past and was not in the original sort of structure of the Constitution. It's a procedural sort of process in the Senate. Can be removed and has been in the past, and that would facilitate moving that act forward.
Removed or modified.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, our senators.
Kind of thing.
I'm sorry, Lynn.
Lynn.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. I was just going to ask who can do that kind of procedural change, the Senate? And if so, if that's who has to do it, why would they have any incentive to do it?
By a majority vote in the Senate. So only requires
just a plain majority.
Yeah, in this case, cross your fingers, 50 Democrats. Is what it would likely be. There's at least two Democrats who have vocalized their opposition to removal of the filibuster. Senator Sinema in Arizona and Senator Manchin in West Virginia. Senator Manchin recently has come out to say he might entertain some changes to the filibuster, which is a crack in the door of hope for those of us who think that everybody should have access to get to the polls as long as they have, right, that they're appropriately you know, citizens of the country and have the right to vote. They should be able to exercise that right without undue burdens like, you know, multiple forms of ID, which sometimes are hard to acquire. We mentioned Deb Haaland, which I appreciate that mention earlier. In the 2020 election, many Native Americans living on reservations in the Dakotas, I believe, were required to have physical address in order to vote. Well, they don't have physical addresses on the reservation. So these are the kind of voter suppression tactics that we're seeing more and more of in a huge rush right now. And so this is the call to action to try to address those.
Right. So on a little bit lighter note, Kevin, what has struck your funny bone this week?
Oh, you know, I don't know about funny necessarily, but the Mason bees are back on Vashon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, up at Sunrise Ridge.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah, if you've never had an opportunity to be a Mason beekeeper, it's fascinating. Susie and I have been doing that for about the last 3 or 4 years. And the first year we did it, Jerry Gerke, who's the coordinator on Vashon, said, "I have bad news for you guys. We've had kind of a colder than normal spring. So you're going to have to cut the Mason bees out of the cocoons." Oh. And if you've never seen a Mason bee cocoon, it's about the size of a Jelly Belly jelly bean. It's not those big, like Brock's jelly beans, scary. You know, those, it's the little tiny Jelly Belly jelly bean. So you get a pair of scissors, sharper the better, and you hold this jelly bean in your hand and you try to cut, right, a slit in the jelly bean. And you don't want to cut the bee, right? And you don't want to, I've had some five-legged bees around the place as a consequence, but they have six, right? So, but it's just a fascinating thing to be able to cut this live insect out of this cocoon. And the first thing normally is you pop the cocoon open, sort of like a baked potato where you cut it and squeeze the ends. And there's an eye and then an antenna sort of sticks out. And then the bee slowly emerges. So anyway, if you're intrigued by Mason bees, Jerry is the guy. And
interesting.
Great to see them back.
Fascinating sort of little piece of information. The Mason bee pickup process, you know, the drive-through, pick up your Mason bee. That became the model for the testing and the COVID vaccination because it had worked so successfully in distributing Mason bees. The CERT organization and Jerry was working with the CERT organization suggested, well, why don't we do the testing and the vaccination in the same way we do the Mason bee pickup?
Clever.
So a community takes a village, right? Dale, you had something?
Oh, I just wanted to ask, when you say the Mason bees are back, Kevin, can you talk a little bit more about that? Like I'm one of those people that notices those kind of things. So I know they've been gone because I've been missing them around my house. They like to build their well, nest isn't the right word, but kind of lay their eggs right into the little grooves in the shingles of my house. And so I've noticed that they haven't been around for a while. And tell me what's happened with them. Were they part of the hive collapses that were happening, or what's the story with the Mason bees?
Well, this process that I'm referring to that Jerry helps manage on Vashon, there's actually a Mason bee producer, and I believe they're in Woodinville. And we on Vashon are like the Mason bee farmers. And so what they do is that when you pick up your Mason bees from Jerry, you have three tubes and a nest. And the nest has all those little slats and cubby holes where the bees can basically lay their eggs. And so you put out the nest, and then at the appropriate time, you'll put out one of the tubes of bees that are in their cocoons. And they're in the fridge, right? And so as the days warm up, the bees stir, they chew their way out of the cocoons, and they go off and pollinate your apple trees or your cherry trees or, find pollen in your big leaf maples. And after about a month and a half, after the subsequent tubes are put out and all the bees are flying around doing great work around your house, ideally they nest in the nest block that came along. And then Jerry picks those up and they go back to Woodinville. And what's essential, really important for Mason bees to keep the viruses away, is they take those all apart, make sure there's no parasites in those, and then store the cocoons over the winter and then deliver them back to us bee farmers here on Vashon.
Very cool. Thanks, Kevin.
I have a friend on the west side who does his own Mason bees, and he builds these Mason bee condos, you know, basically boards with holes drilled in them, and the Mason bees fill them up, and then he keeps them in his refrigerator over the winter. you know, he's got a spare refrigerator. He just stores them over the winter, and then in the spring sets them back out, and he has his own Mason Bee sort of production effort. So it's possible to do, but they do love shingles, and they do love sort of burrowing up underneath the shingles. Yeah, Lynn.
I just noticed a couple of years ago that nothing that I planted that required pollination grew very well. And so, you know, you make me think about, you know, becoming a bee farmer, because I found it slightly creepy and unsavory to be trying to pollinate my squash blossoms with an artist brush, to be down there kind of having sex with the flowers just creeped me out, you know. It kind of worked, but, you know, artificial insemination. And actually, Kevin, what you talked about, little tiny cesareans, I'm so sorry, that's creepy. I don't know if I'm cut out to be a Mason bee farmer, but I might give it a shot.
Yes, well, the cutting the bees out of the cocoons is not a normal thing to do, but I've gotten to the point where I enjoy it a lot. So what happens is one of these tubes goes out right after I give them a week or so on their own to get busy and, you know, chew their way out of the cocoon. But after a week or so, those bees that are still left in the cocoons are just not going to make it unless they get freed. So I come to the rescue, and if I find it to be enjoyable.
Great.
Okay.
Great stuff. Only on that shot, right? So one of our original brief leaves is West Sider futurist, writer, dream catcher, and peripatetic poet Gail Kellner. Gail, what are your mystic muses advising you to focus on as a key issue this week?
Well, my dream catcher definitely picked up on the Deb Haaland confirmation. That was just such wonderful news in so many ways, because of course the irony is so beautiful that we now have a Native American woman heading up the Department of Interior, which of course is part of the Bureau of Land. They manage the Bureau of Land Management and Indian Affairs. And so that is a fantastic, just a fantastic turn of events, as far as I'm concerned, both from a Native people perspective, as well as from the perspective of a woman. And to see that appointment and confirmation just thrilled me. She will be, you know, able, I think, to step into that position with a level of spirituality, if I may, and and understanding with a deep personal history about the meaning of that role. So, that's what got caught in my dream catcher this week, Kevin.
The 34th generation, I believe, is what I've heard. So,
In a pueblo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Talk about a place probably without an address.
Yeah, it's, if I've had the good opportunity to listen to Native speakers on a number of occasions, the Elwha Dam removal, for example, Potlatch out on at Niobe, where a group had canoed over from Vancouver Island for this potlatch, if you can imagine that, across the Strait of Juan de Fuca. I was enamored with how astute and how they were able to really speak to the soul. And a friend of mine, an archaeologist, said that the vocal history, the oral history, promotes those skills as opposed to the written word. And you're right to be amazed, because it's a capability that has been developed through generations, and we really should listen, because they have a lot to say.
Lynn and Gail.
I was just going to say that the spirituality piece, I mean, one of the things, and I don't mean this in any way to at anyone in particular, but the patriarchy of European of European systems does not acknowledge the spirituality of the earth and of the people and the plants, animals, and flora and fauna of this whole system. And that's what's exciting to me, to see a woman from her background step into that role and bring that kind of sensibility to the table.
You know, Gail, that was exactly kind of what I was going to say. The Industrial Revolution, you know, the mechanization of our economies have divorced us from the sense of wholeness with the land and with the earth and our place in the world. You know, we are dominating to such a degree that, you know, we've reached the point of diminishing returns, literally. And I, like you, really appreciate the use of that word, spirituality, to kind of say there is more to life than just making money and drilling into the earth, and we need to protect the earth and each other. So thank you for saying that.
And, you know, she'll be responsible for, like, in part, over almost 2 million Native American people, 5 million acres of public land, federal waters off the both coasts, our dams, our reservoirs, protections of thousands of endangered species. So it's a big win, and the result of all the hard work that everyone's done to put Biden in that position. You know.
So this has been a very interesting hour, 45-minute hour. Let me close out with a little funny story we can all agree, sort of identify with. I got this from a friend of mine, a gentleman of a certain age, which we can all identify with, went to get his COVID shot, and everything worked fine. And then on the way home, he noticed his vision was getting blurry. He was sort of having trouble driving. So he got home and he called back and said, you know, I've had these problems. What should I do? And the people at the vaccination site said, do not go to the hospital. Do not go to the emergency room. Come back to the vaccination site and get the glasses you forgot.
That is awesome. Hey, we just have 5 seconds. I just want to tell you one quick thing. This is from Anand Gidarajas. I can't pronounce his last name. But he said, for decades, we thought of citizenship as a possession. Now we remember that it is something you do, not something you hold. I thought that was very interesting.
Hear, hear.
See you guys all next week.
God, yours.